Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Love the 80s? Then you'll love Virgin Radio 80s Plus.
Love Chris Evans. Love the 80s.
Over on Virgin Radio
80s Plus.
Elizabeth Day!
Hey Elizabeth, how are you?
I'm so well. Thank you for having me.
Elizabeth, you're very welcome. You can see I've marked your book in various places, but I don't know why. I have read
Let's
it.
Say it's because you enjoyed it.
Yeah, no,
I've start on that note.
Then I just reverted to Sharpie. Then I started to write over the book. It's a reprint with an extra chapter. The number one Sunday Times bestseller, Friendaholic, Confessions of a Friendship Addict, Elizabeth Day. You have your podcast, How to Fail. Also, How to Fail with Friends now makes an appearance, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly.
In betwixt.
It's kind of interesting. I don't know what your experience is, but I never really know what I'm interested by until someone else tells me. And I realise now, looking back, that there is a connective tissue where I'm clearly interested in the idea of expectation, what we expect from friendship as a society, but also what we expect from success as a society. And sometimes we fail, and it's about how we deal with that in a friendship setting as well as a success setting.
So the first question that came to me, I was thinking, oh no, I'm thinking this, nobody else is thinking that she hasn't talked about it, and there is the title of chapter 5, thank God. Male friendships, does gender matter? And then when Harry met Sally conundrum, let's start off with this.
Yeah, sure.
Does gender matter when it comes to friendships?
Oh, it's such a deep question. One of my favourite movies of all time is When Harry Met Sally. And actually, that movie informed the structure of Friendaholic, because if anyone has seen that movie, you'll know that they have real life couples interspersed in the narrative. It's so beautiful. And I wanted to have that in Friendaholic. So in between all of my wanging on about friendship, you also have what I call the friendship tapes, where it's people from vastly diverse backgrounds from my own talking about their own perception of friendship. But I knew that I wanted to address the idea of whether cis straight men and cis straight women can ever truly be friends without, as Harry would say in the movie, the sex part getting in the way.
Yeah.
And my conclusion in short is yes, but at some point the sex thing has to be addressed. So either one of the friends that I talk about in that chapter is my dear friend Satnam. We were set up on a date together and we rapidly established within the first few minutes that we were going to be far better as friends than anything else. So we'd got that out of the way. Or you can have some friendships with exes where you know that it hasn't worked romantically, but there's something that you still love about that person.
See,
platonically.
Why is that making my blood run cold already, that? Do you know those two scenarios?
Having said that, my husband doesn't agree that you can be friend with exes.
Excellent.
So it's an interesting and individual take on a problem. But my personal opinion is that people of all genders can be friends with each other as long as they have clear communication.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose so. I suppose you're right. You know this more than I do. You've written over 400 pages about it. And you have this amazing podcast about it as well.
But
male friendships.
That's what's interesting. And I wanted to ask you about male friendship. Because a lot of the research shows that...
Here we go. Everyone. Straight in.
A lot of the research shows that Chris Evans has no friends. So I'm kidding. You've got loads of friends.
Well, you don't know that.
Well, I'm about to ask you. So... most straight men seem to hemorrhage friendships around their 30s or 40s.
Right.
And some of the research has shown that that's generally because they might be settling down.
Yes.
So they might be getting married and they might be having kids.
Yes.
And that takes up the bulk of their time.
Yes.
And very generally speaking, and I realise that I'm speaking broadly, but women in that situation might be more practised at those small social interactions where they can just connect with someone really quickly over a coffee or a yoga class or at the school gates. And men, very generally speaking, are maybe less practised in that. But do you have friends?
Interesting. Yes, I do. Thank God. Whether I deserve them or not is another matter. What's interesting about the male thing is... I was going to say to you, do you think friendship comes more naturally to women, right? But that's one question. I'm actually going to unask that question. In response to your question, in my case, it was all about locations. So I had location friends. So I had my pub friends. Then you'd have your footy friends. Yeah. Then you'd have your work friends. And as the pub fell away, then those friends would fall away with it. But blokes, in my experience, didn't seem to mind that. And so I think a lot of blokes, not all blokes at all, but in my experience, blokes tend to have friendships around situations where the women in my life that I've met seem to have friends for friends.
Yes. You know,
and it's not about subject, narrative, Tuesday night at the football, Thursday night at judo or whatever, or Friday in the pub, Friday night, 7 o'clock in the pub. They're just 360 friends.
Yes.
Whereas blokes, I don't know whether we compartmentalise our friendship because it's safer. Sorry, I'm talking a lot. It's your interview. By the way, I could talk to you about that forever. And because Vassos is, you're very interesting with friends because you have your running friends, don't you? Mm-hmm. And then you have your uni friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have your swimming friends now. Then you have your radio friends. So, sorry, that's sort of the flavour of my answer for your question.
And I think you've nailed it. I think there's so much to unpack here around social conditioning and evolutionary history about what it means to be a certain gender.
Interesting.
And one of the things that has been established to rectify this hemorrhaging of male friendship is something called the Men's Shed movement. It started in Australia, a fantastic man called Ray Winder. And he understood what you understand at some primal level. He understood that if men feel isolated and alone, there needs to be a shared activity that brings them together.
Yeah. It's a shoulder-to-shoulder thing, not a face-to-face thing.
Very interesting. So he commandeered this local shed in his community.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, every Wednesday night we're going to do something, whether that be playing darts, watching football, knitting, learning how to knit, and we're going to invite anyone who wants to come and do this activity.
Yeah.
And it meant that the barrier to friendship was less high, because it can be super intimidating as an adult to think, I need to make a friend. And actually, if you're doing something together, that's how you can forge it.
And I wonder if it's back to hunter-gathering times when we used to meet before we went to hunt, and then we'd go on hunting together and go off for the weekend to try and get some beasties to eaties. You know, I don't know.
And women were, well, yes, again, there's been a lot of research done about that and about maybe we bring our own modern perceptions onto that sort of history.
Yeah.
And there have, anyway, I'm getting off on a tangent, but there have been bones discovered of a female hunter-gatherer.
No, I'm sure
there's probably a lot more blending of gender than we know.
Jeez.
But there is so much social conditioning around men and whether or not they feel able to admit to things like loneliness, failure or vulnerability. And so I think that we put a lot of pressure on each other to live up to these sort of social expectations of how we should be.
Yeah, not running away from the hunter-gathering, you know, females did it as well. Absolutely they did, because the longer you run now in long-distance racing, the more equal the genders get.
That's so interesting.
So Courtney DeWalter, who's the greatest female ultra-runner of all time, now wins races full stop. So she wins, she beats all the men as well. Because the longer you go, the more equal it is. So that would make sense.
God, we're just great at endurance, aren't we?
Yeah, women. We are. I mean, that's what we can outrun anything, given long enough.
That'll be my next book.
Yeah, and it also is to do with fat stores and to do with glucose. So we have enough fat in us, generally, if we're, you know, reasonably fed, to run for 7 days without eating anything else, as long as we can tap into our fat stores. But we don't naturally do that because we know that the fat stores are for an emergency. So we tap into our sugar and our glucose supplies, which is more sort of, it's like the service station down the road as opposed to the Ellesmere Port petrol refinery.
Yeah.
So that all makes total sense. But then again, of course, even then the men couldn't have the babies. So when the women did have the babies, the men would have to go out and do the hunting and gathering while some of the women had the babies.
Yes, and actually, it's one of the things that I'm fascinated about. And when I started writing Friendaholic, I wanted to look into all the research around friendship and whether there was an evolutionary reason for it. Yeah. Because it's one of those relationships which seems to have no evolutionary function. You are not procreating with your platonic friends. And actually, there'd been a total scarcity of research, partly because a lot of academics were only interested in romantic relationships, and that slightly reflected our obsession with a society as a whole. As a society, we have elevated romantic love above all other kinds. Most of our pop music. Most of our literature, most of our movies are about the search for romantic love. And actually, for me, friendship, both the presence of it and the absence of it, has been one of the most defining forces of my life. And yeah, I really wanted to give that a language.
See, it's funny, isn't it? Because Shakespeare very much, you know, love, you know, marriage, you know, jeopardy, infidelity, jealousy, all pursuit, all that kind of stuff. But way before that, Plato, from where we get the word platonic.
Yes.
So just speak to that, if you don't mind.
Yeah. Well, Cicero actually wrote one of the earliest treatises on friendship called How to Be a Friend. And it was really interesting to read that when it came to writing Friendaholic, because actually in ancient civilizations and classical civilizations, so much attention was paid to friendship, partly because so much time was spent at war. So a lot of men were thrown into war situations where comradeship became incredibly important. Yeah. And Cicero has so many amazing things to say about friendship that still hold true to this day. One of the things that blew my mind and has changed the way that I think about friendship is Cicero compares it to a chariot race. Okay. Right. So he says, when you meet a friend, you might be caught up in the sort of heady rush of having met a kindred spirit, but you should always test the friendship out before committing to it. In the same way as you test the horse out before you attach it to your chariot.
Wow. How might you do that? What's the best three ways to test a potential friend pre-official friendship?
Well, in romantic love, of course, we're very used to this. It's called dating.
Yeah.
So we might meet someone on Hinge, like I met my husband. Shout out to Hinge. Yeah. we might text for a bit. We're sort of signing each other out.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
might then meet for our first date. By the second date, if you like
That's
each other...
That's not testing, though, is it? That's not
I think it is.
Do you think it is?
I think it's about... I suppose there's a different way of testing. It's all to do with the language.
Yeah.
I suppose what I'm thinking is like you're testing the parameters of what you both want from the relationship.
Yeah.
Do you have shared goals and aspirations?
Yeah.
Are you going to communicate in the same way? We never have these conversations with our friends.
Yes.
And it means that sometimes there's so much misplaced guilt around it, around not having answered a phone call because you haven't had time. How much easier would it be if we introduced the notion of friendship dating?
Yeah, no, I get that. The reason I was confusing is because I'm stupid and you're clever, but also, as well as that, if you road test a car, you know, you brake test it, you hit the brakes really hard. If you're deciding what car to buy, you do the what you're talking about. What kind of car do we want? What color
does
it, you know, do we want a hybrid? Do we want an EV? Do we want a hatchback? Do we want a saloon? You know, that kind of, so for me, that's sort of more that flavor. But testing it is like, right, does it work? How fast can it go? You know, that kind of, that's testing.
Yeah, and I think that can only happen when you're in a friendship.
Yeah.
So it depends. How important are your friendships to you and how can you determine that? You need to work out your own metric of friendship.
Yes.
My most important metric of friendship is generosity of spirit. That idea that someone is thinking the best of me, even if I'm rubbish at replying to their texts.
Yes.
Now, at some point, your friendship might encounter challenge and you might rupture, you might fall out. Is your friendship important enough for you to put in the effort to repair it? Because some friendships will be, and you will be able to accommodate that, and some friendships won't be, and it's okay to evolve and to move on and to forge new friendships, because ultimately that relationship has always shaped your life in some integrally important way. And going back to failure, I don't think any friendship or any relationship is a failure simply because it ends.
Yeah, there's so much obviously in this book, in what you've just said, it's all great. There's a particularly great section on people, your so-called friends who do not want the best for you.
Yes.
And it's a projection of their own low self-esteem and their own disappointment and dissatisfaction.
Or it could be a projection of my own dissatisfaction and low self-esteem. And there was a chapter that I wrote in Friendaholic, which was extremely important to me, about my self-perceived failure to have babies when all of my friends seemed to be popping out children with alacrity. And again, there were certain friends who really made the effort to understand my perspective in a way that I hope I did theirs. And there were others who couldn't make that leap. And sadly, they fell by the wayside. But there's no real blame on either side there. It's more about whether we have capacity to make that effort to understand where each party is coming from. And some of the research I quote in Friendaholic is from Professor Robin Dunbar, who really is the OG of friendship studies. And he coined a number called Dunbar's number, which is 150, which he says is the maximum amount of connections that the human brain can cope with, where you know a salient fact about that person. You know their name and a salient fact. And it's a number replicated again and again through history. It's the average size of a medieval village. It's the average size of a Christmas card list. And he finessed this theory later in life into a theory of layers, where he talks about having a first layer of up to five key relationships in your life. If you have a long-term romantic partnership and if you have kids, he says that will cost you two of those other relationships. So I've been doing friendship wrong for a very long time, in that I've been trying to treat everyone as if they were in my innermost layer. And actually, there's not enough time.
I know. But it's so interesting, isn't it? Because it's so individual, because we are the centre of our own universe, merely because we see it from, well, egotistically, we may be one way. But geographically, we just are, because we're in the middle of it, because we have a 360-degree point of view from wherever we, you know, turn our owl-like or head. But I have five children, two grandchildren. Wow. I have a wife. I have two ex-wives. I have loads of friends at work.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, I'm sort of baked here, you know. Also, I think that, because the book is called Friendaholic, because you are a friendaholic.
I'm addicted to friendship,
you're addicted
yes.
to it. Some of us aren't. Doesn't mean we don't have friends. What is the opposite? You know, because if you're an alcoholic, the opposite is not drinking alcohol. It doesn't mean you don't like drinking or you don't like life. So I wonder what the opposite of a friendaholic is. I don't know if you've thought about that phrase.
I have. I haven't thought about a buzz phrase.
Right.
I must do that. But I think the opposite of a friendaholic is someone who has awareness and understanding of what friendship is.
Why did you go serious then?
Because
you weren't sure, or because you're work in progress?
Because it's a work in progress.
Right.
And so I think for a very long time, I had mistaken the idea of being friendly with actively pursuing a committed friendship.
Yes.
And that's all wrapped up in my own self-esteem.
Yeah, of course.
It all is. Being bullied at school, everything.
Yes.
And now I understand that difference. So I understand it. So that's step number one.
Yeah.
I haven't yet done step number two. I know.
Yeah. I could tell the way you... Because you didn't go serious. You just went... You meant focused. I thought, oh, this is still... This is a live thought.
Definitely. But can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Because you are someone who is beloved and has a public profile.
Yeah.
So you must get a lot of people who, A, feel like they know you, and B, want to be your friend. So how do you cope with that? Because you are someone who, on the one hand, needs to give so much of themselves because of what you do so brilliantly. But you must also need to have boundaries in place.
Yeah, I think... But the boundaries keep... People, we talked about this last week. So the boundaries, you could say the boundaries is to keep people out you don't want, or to keep things you do want in, or you need something to push against. So boundaries are helpful. Otherwise, you unravel, which I have done in the past loads and loads of times. Speaking to what is it like to meet people in the high street or wherever, it's gorgeous, it's beautiful, it's lovely, it's almost always a very, very pleasurable and enjoyable experience. And the more in the moment you are, the more time you have for it, and the more in the moment you are when this exchange occurs, in a way, there's a sort of karmic reward to that, because if you give people everything of you in the moment, they don't want as long of you.
Yeah,
because
beautiful.
Because you are so vertical as opposed to horizontal.
Yes.
And you don't start face to face, then suddenly turn your right shoulder 1 degree, suggesting that in a moment this is the beginning of this moment ending. You're just straight in the middle. You open your heart, you breathe to your tummy, and they feel it. And in the end, it's usually that they turn their shoulder and go, well, nice to meet you. And they sort of not let you off, but, you know, they go, thank you very much. This is great. It's been almost, I can't remember a recent experience that wasn't like that. Speaking to everything else we talked about on top of that, you know, I also think that I don't have time really for friends. It doesn't mean I don't want them. And, Vass is one of my best friends in the whole wide world and people on the show, but Vass and I are IRL friends as well. And I have other friends from the past who are, they get it. Mm. They come to our house thinking, I haven't seen you for ages. They spend 1 minute in our house, they go, I'm going to go now. I know, understand. But on top of that, I do find the security of community, which isn't friendship, but it is human interaction, and faith, because I have faith as well. And so I always sort of feel like I have a friend anyhow.
Wow.
And that is different. That's why I'm not a friendaholic.
that is so beautiful. I just want to package all of that up and put it into the book, but I've written it already, so yeah, I can't. But that is so profound. And thank you for sharing that. Because I think one of the reasons that I became a friendaholic is because I had this existential fear of loneliness. Because I don't have children and I've tried and failed to have children. Yeah. And there's this idea that haunts me that at the end of my life, it's just going to be me and everyone I loved will have died. And it's just me and nothing else. And I've come to terms with that partly because of what you have just so beautifully explained, because I feel I belong to a community that is so much bigger than me.
Yeah.
And part of that is the gift of having people who read my books and who listen to my podcasts. And also part of that is not having had children, being in a community of other people who have tried and failed and travelled their own path. And that's given me purpose. And I think having purpose and belief in something bigger is the thing that will never make you feel truly alone.
Yeah. And the me and the I, you know, the more you think of me and the I, it's defining there's something above and beyond what you need there to be, which is just living from moment to moment. And I love your book. I love your writing. I love the podcast that I've listened to. I've not listened to all of them because so many, and I've listened to podcasts all the time. But, and there is a but here, but I never feel alone because I have faith.
Yeah.
And so in a way, I just wish everybody else could get that. And it's not God, it might be God, it might not be God. I just never feel alone, ever. And so I'm like, oh, how do I get, but you can't, it's not my job to get everybody else over the line or even to get them, to dare them or to urge them to look over the garden fence. But once you've seen the fact you're never alone, ever, well, you'll never be alone, ever.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
It won't be like this forever, so just enjoy it while it's here. It's a really wonderful thing.
And James Bay.
It's about me. It's about my relationship with Lucy. It sums up so much of what went into writing this whole album. We're all works in progress. I still don't necessarily know who I am.
And Depeche Mode's Dave Gahan remembering the late, great Andy Fletcher.
I'll be honest with you, the first thought that came in my head was, I wish I'd been a bit kinder.
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
Do you know what? My wife Caroline loves spin, as you do, and she is
Caroline.
Now a little bit worried that her spin, she has a spin friend, like you had a spin friend, Becca, and they meet after spin and they have a smoothie together in the gym.
See, you're parking your tanks on blokes' lawns here.
But she's now worried that her Becca will. So, I mean, actually, because it does, you say it doesn't have a happy ending when we were talking before we went on air, but actually it sort of does for you, this
yes.
story. So tell us about Becca.
First of all, hello, Caroline. You sound like my kind of person. Secondly, so I wrote a chapter about a former friend of mine called Becca, and it's the first and I think only time that I've experienced friendship ghosting. So Becca, I would have categorised as one of my three closest friends. And I think what happened with our friendship is that we bonded very quickly and we bonded over shared sadness. So although we met in a spin class, it rapidly became apparent that we were both stuck in difficult romantic relationships. And over the course of the next couple of years, I made a decision to leave my relationship and she was still in hers. And I think as my life progressed in a certain way, it probably reflected to Becca that her life wasn't moving in the direction that maybe subconsciously she wanted. And we grew apart without my really understanding what was happening. So the texts became less frequent. We used to meet for an evening cocktail. That became a daytime coffee. I just got the feeling that she didn't want me as an intimate part of her life. And so I thought, okay, well, I'll give her a bit of space. And then that space turned into a permanent state of affairs. And I never heard from her again. And I walked past her in the street one day and she blanked me. And it felt horrendous, and I felt a great deal of shame because I felt I must have done something absolutely terrible as a friend to have warranted this treatment. And so I really did examine what I might have done wrong for a very long time. It was a slow motion grief, the likes of which I've never experienced before or since. And now looking back, I think I can own up to my failures as a friend in that situation. I was really cowardly. I didn't ask her about it. I was too conflict avoidant. And that probably meant that I was being dishonest in some way. I wasn't showing up as myself. And I think that I should have had more courage to do that. And I'm sure she was going through her own thing. And for whatever reason, we couldn't find the language to express what we were both feeling. And whilst I feel sad about that now, I think of her with a great deal of love and fondness because that friendship taught me so much about what to do better in the future. And so my advice to Caroline would be, don't worry, just don't make the same mistakes that I did, because I think the truest friendships allow you space to be honest and to call out conflict and to ask someone what they need from you and what you could be doing better without that feeling like the final guillotine. So that was my Becca experience. And yes, even though it didn't have a happy ending in the sense that we're no longer friends, it did have a happy ending in the fact that I think we've both evolved as people as a result of it.
Yeah, you were tempted to take her back at one point, and then after she blanked you in the street, you also saw her in a cafe and she looked straight through you. Mm. Is that one up from being blank then?
I don't know. I'll have to consult Emily Post. Yeah, I mean, felt quite chilling, I have to say.
Yeah, like it wasn't ghosty. What was the one? There's
Cutting dead.
What's that?
Cutting dead.
That's the phrase you used, yes. Yeah.
That used to be a phrase used a lot in Victorian times where it was seen as one of the sort of ultimate insults was to be cut dead in the street. And it did feel like that. But I do what I always do when I try to make sense of the world. I talk to my friends. And right. It was a friend of mine, Satnam, who I mentioned earlier, who said, I would think less of you. Because I did think I should resurrect this friendship and let's try and make it better. And he said, I would think less of you if you let that person back into your life. Because ultimately, what does that mean about how you value friendship? Yeah. It sort of means also, you let
What are you trying to do?
What am I trying to prove about myself?
What's the point, man?
It's a bit like a nightclub where they just allow anyone in.
Yeah.
And actually, the reason there's a bouncer on the door is because they want to preserve a sort of safe, fun atmosphere. It's almost like friendship is a nightclub. The people that you allow in, the people that you give your time and your energy to, we need to respect friendship to such a degree that we only let people in who are the ones who are going to value that and respect it in turn and to pay the reciprocity back.
So maybe the juiciest chapter is chapter 8, Frenemies.
Oh, yes.
Just because A, it's a great word. B, it is actually a very juicy chapter. But of course, if you meet the love of your life, like thankfully I have, Vassos has, you have.
Yes.
That also takes a lot of your friend space up. You've got to acknowledge that. You've got to surrender to that.
Yes. And no,
right.
In the sense that, again, for me, my truest friends wanted and still want the best for me.
Yes.
So the fact that in my 30s, I went through a divorce, I went through failed fertility treatment, another relationship ended out of the blue, they really wanted me to find happiness. And so when I did, it was a cause for celebration. And now, because my husband is amazing and is my equal and I'm his, and it's a partnership of equals, we socialise together and my friends love him. And that's really important. And of course, there are some friends who won't get that and who can't accommodate that change in circumstance. And my response to that is, A, are they a true friend? Or B, are they a friend who maybe belongs to one of Dunbar's outer layers rather than your innermost?
So much to talk about. And it's all from our own perspective. So these aren't arguments. It's an exchange of opinion, isn't it, I suppose? An exchange of opinion, experience, circumstance, perspective, all those different things, all those different ingredients. We've all got our own sort of super smoothie going on, but there's different ingredients in the Nutribullet. Or the Ninja thing. I don't know, we've got three of
Ninja? It's called The Ninja, isn't it?
Yeah. No, it's Ninja. You can have something, Ninja. Something, Ninja's okay. The brand. Anyway, but there's other stuff in it. We've not had time to talk about it. There's couples, friends. When you're friends with couples, does that work? Is there one organised doing all the heavy lifting? The other one's just coming along for the ride. There's, can you marry a friend?
Yes.
Yes, you can marry a friend in this day and age. Wow. Is right, can you have a prenup with the friend? Wow, maybe. We're out of time. Elizabeth, I hope you enjoyed the chat.
I have loved it so much. I'm really sad we're out of time. Can I just stay for the rest of the programme?
Of course you can.
Let's talk about Hunter Gatherers.
Sorry, Sinead, you didn't get a look in.
No, that's fine. Don't worry.
I apologise. The number one Sunday Times best-selling Friendaholic is out now in paperback. This isn't out till Thursday. So how has it already been a number one? Because it was out last year. There's an extra chapter, there's extra stuff. Confessions of a Friendship Addict, Elizabeth Day. Joyful, says the Sunday Times. Essential, says the Guardian. Joyful and essential.
What more could you want?
It's only two words. And you can't ask more from just two words. And of course, your podcast cracks on How to Fail with Elizabeth Day. Over 50 million downloads. And you're on tour, 7-day tour for this Friendaholic book tour. Tickets available, elizabethday.org. And it kicks off in Derry tomorrow night. All right. Have a great one.
Thank you, Chris.
You're the best.
You are.
Mark Wogan was right. She's the best.
Craving some great 80s music? Play Virgin Radio 80s Plus. I want your love. On DAB Digital Radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, and at virginradio80splus.co.uk. I got my mind set on you. Even if we're just dancing in the
dark. Love Chris Evans. Woo! Love the 80s.
Virgin Radio
80s Plus.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.